A Katra podcast, conversations for the curious, essential knowledge simplified. Your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of a Katra AI. Welcome to the deep dive. We take complex sources, sometimes really challenging ones, and try to boil them down so you're instantly well-informed. Our mission today is, well, it's about really shifting how you might look at things. We're digging into the key work of Ashish Rajakhyoksha. He's one of India's most respected film scholars. And we're using his ideas to understand Indian cinema, Bollywood, regional films, all of it, not just as, you know, fun escapism.
Right. The idea is that it's actually been this critical active force, a cultural institution, really.
Exactly. Something that actually shaped modern Indian identity, politics, even social awareness.
Yeah. It's pretty profound when you think about it that way.
Our sources are pretty academic, but the core idea is just fascinating. How do you bring together a place with hundreds of languages, incredibly diverse identities?
A massive challenge.
And the answer, according to this analysis, film. Cinema created this kind of shared national language. Okay, so let's try and unpack that. It's a huge claim.
It really is. And to get it, you first have to understand who Ashish Rajakhyoksha is. I mean, he's a major figure, a leading film historian, cultural critic.
He co-edited that massive encyclopedia of Indian cinema.
That's the one. So he's got the deep academic background, the PhD fellowships, all that. But he also bridges it with cultural analysis in a really unique way. What makes his view so different is he goes beyond just like listing film dates and directors. He uses ideas from cultural studies, political economy, basically looking at how power and money connect with art.
Okay.
And that lets him see these deeper patterns in Indian filmmaking. The key insight, really, is that Indian cinema developed its own way of doing things, its own look and feel, its own storytelling logic. It created this culturally specific kind of modernity.
Hold on. So you're saying the way we usually judge movies,
yeah,
you know, comparing them to Hollywood or maybe European films, right, that might be completely the wrong way to look at Indian cinema.
That's exactly what Rajakhyoksha argues. He really challenges that common Western idea that, oh, Indian films are just spectacle, maybe a bit over the top, not as sophisticated.
Yeah, you hear that sometimes.
He says, wait a minute, these films aren't crude or simple. They're actually really smart responses to very specific situations in India's history and society. What looks like excess, the melodrama, the songs, it's all functional. It's doing something important.
Mm. Makes you think. And this sort of unique structure, it starts right from the very beginning, doesn't it? Tied up with the anti-colonial movement.
Absolutely. You look at the pioneer, Dadasaheb Phalke, often called the father of Indian cinema.
Right. Raja Harishchandra, 1913.
Exactly. And his choice of subject mythology, Rajakhyoksha says, that wasn't just random. It was political. It was a deliberate Swadeshi act.
Swadeshi meaning like homegrown, indigenous.
Yeah, focusing on Indian production, Indian culture. Phalke drew on traditional Indian arts, storytelling. He was consciously trying to define an Indian way of making films, pushing back against British cultural influence.
Yeah.
So the very first feature film was, in a way, a cultural statement.
Wow. Okay.
And then, fast forward, India gets independence in 1947. The new government, under Nehru, sees cinema, and they realize, wow, this stuff is powerful. It could help knit this incredibly diverse country together.
Build a sense of nationhood.
Precisely. But it was complicated. The government needed cinema's reach, but they were also suspicious of it. You know, the commercial side, the melodrama, they worried it wasn't morally upright enough.
So a love-hate relationship.
Sort of, yeah. And ambivalence. And this is where Rajakhyoksha brings in the idea of the national allegory.
Okay, national allegory. And the big example everyone points to is Mother India, right? 1957. It's this epic film, hugely popular. But calling it an allegory, doesn't that kind of reduce the story? I mean, it's about a woman's struggle.
That's the interesting part of the argument. Rajakhyoksha says it works on both levels at once.
Yeah.
Yes, Radha, the main character, goes through incredible hardship, makes sacrifices for her family, her land.
A very powerful human story.
Absolutely. But her struggle also symbolizes the struggle of the new nation itself. You know, dealing with tradition versus modernity, village versus city, the tough moral choices needed to build something new. The film wasn't just reflecting reality. It was actively helping define the moral language of the nation for millions of people.
Mm, okay. That's a powerful idea. So let's dig into those elements that often get dismissed, especially by Western critics. The melodrama, the songs, the dances. This is where you said it gets really interesting.
Yeah, because Rajakhyoksha flips the script. He says these aren't flaws, they're features. They're essential to how these films work.
So the melodrama, you know, the high emotion, clear good versus evil, family drama, It's not just simple storytelling.
Not according to him. He argues it's a very sophisticated strategy. Think about it. India was going through massive, rapid change. Modernization can be confusing, unsettling.
Right, old certainties disappear.
Exactly. And melodrama provides this, like, public space to work through big moral questions, duty, sacrifice, betrayal, in a way that feels emotionally resonant and provides a kind of moral compass, a form of public ethics almost.
Okay, I can see that. And the music and dance, not just added fluff.
Definitely not filler.
Yeah.
He argues they are structural. They do things that dialogue alone just can't.
Like what?
Well, expressing deep internal emotions, think forbidden love, immense grief, a song can convey that instantly. Or it can shift time, location, bridge scenes. It can even get around censorship sometimes, expressing things indirectly. It's rooted in centuries of Indian performance traditions.
So it's like using modern film technology, the camera, editing, but applying it to older, indigenous ways of telling stories and expressing emotion, a fusion.
That's a great way to put it, a true fusion. And that's why judging it solely by Western conventions misses the point. You miss the cultural logic. Rajahaksha calls it a hybrid modernity. It's taking global tech and making it speak a local language very successfully.
Okay, so you have this framework, films like Mother India, setting a kind of moral tone, but then things start to change, right? Especially in the 1970s.
Dramatically. The optimism of the early independence years starts to fade. There's political turmoil. The economy isn't doing great. People are getting disillusioned. The state isn't delivering on its promises.
And this mood finds its voice on screen.
Perfectly. Through one specific figure, Amitabh Bachchan, as the angry young man.
Ah, yes. Iconic. Films like Zanjeer, Diwar.
Exactly. And this character wasn't just, you know, a cool action hero. He was often a brooding, violent guy who worked outside the system. The police, the courts, the politicians, they were often portrayed as corrupt or ineffective.
So he took matters into his own hands.
Right. Rajahaksha says he was more than a character. He was a symptom of this public anger and cynicism.
Yeah.
The star himself becomes this huge political and social icon. He called him a living embodiment of the crisis of the state.
Wow. So the hopeful national allegory of Mother India gives way to what?
Cynicism? Pretty much. Where Radha sacrificed for the nation's ideals, the angry young man often rejected the system entirely. It showed a real breakdown of trust in authority. It captured a public mood that went way beyond just news reports.
Okay, that makes sense. Which brings us to another huge shift. Economic liberalization in 1991. Everything changes then, right? Money flows differently. The audience changes.
The whole landscape transforms. Global connections open up.
And this is where Rajahaksha makes that distinction about the word Bollywood. He says it's not just another name for Hindi movies.
Exactly. He argues Bollywood is something specific that emerges after liberalization. It's a brand.
A brand. How so?
Well, it's generally slicker, technically more polished, looks more global. And ideologically, it often connects more with consumer culture, wealth, aspiration.
And the audience focus shifts too.
Big time. There's a much stronger focus on the affluent diaspora, the non-resident Indians, or NRIs. So if 1950s films might show a gritty village struggle.
Like Mother India.
Right. Then 1990s Bollywood often shows these glossy, upper-class families, big weddings, foreign locations. It's projecting a certain sanitized, often consumerist, vision of India to the world, and also back to India itself. A different project entirely from the earlier nation-building or social realist films.
Okay, that's a really important distinction. So stepping back from all this, what does this whole way of thinking mean for us, you know, the listener? How can we use these ideas?
It gives you a really powerful lens for looking at media, actually.
Mm.
Not just Indian media, but potentially media from any non-Western context.
Okay, application number one.
Instead of just asking, is this film good by Hollywood standards?
Mm-hmm.
You have different questions. Like,
yeah.
What's its own cultural logic? What's it doing for its audience? Why this style? Why these themes? What social function does it serve?
Look deeper than the surface aesthetics.
Exactly. And application two is about understanding India itself better. Rajahaksha talks a lot about the tension between the big all India Hindi films and the really strong regional cinemas, Tamil, Telugu, Malayalam, Bengali.
Which are huge industries in their own right.
Absolutely. They dominate their own language markets, have their own stars, their own narrative concerns. And this cultural competition, this push and pull between the center and the regions in cinema, it mirrors the real political tensions in India's federal system.
So understanding the film landscape helps you understand the political landscape.
It gives you a window into it, into identity politics, into who gets to define what Indianness means today.
Hmm. That's fascinating. So I guess the biggest lesson from Rajadhiksha is maybe a kind of intellectual humility, recognizing that different cultures create art that works in different ways for different reasons.
I think that's a huge part of it. Different societies have equally valid ways of making meaning, expressing themselves artistically.
And the main point is that film is never just entertainment.
Never. It's deeply tied into the economy, into politics, into how a nation sees itself. It's fundamental.
And his work really shows that something being popular, reaching millions, doesn't mean it's simple or shallow.
Quite the opposite. It often means it's found a really effective, culturally powerful way to talk about things that matter deeply to people.
So, a final thought then. The next time you watch a big blockbuster, maybe an Indian one, or even a historical film from anywhere,
Yeah, try looking at it through this lens. Ask yourself, what version of the nation is this film selling me? Whose story is it telling? Whose anxieties is it speaking to right now?
it definitely changes how you watch things, a whole new layer to appreciate.
It really does.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.